This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 163 of The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world. We're still here with me, Andy Zaltzman, the Nobel Prize-winning author of the children's classic Niels Holgersson's Underbara Reise Genomsverige, and star of the 20 kroner note. Sorry, I'm mixing myself up with 1909 Nobel Literature champion Selma Lagerlöf. My mistake. Don't read anything into it. And joining me live from New York City, it's the Mother Teresa of satire, John Oliver.
Hello, Andy. Hello, Buglers. I've got to say, Andy, hearing you speak German is not pleasant.
It wasn't German, but... mate. That was Swedish.
Well, it all Swedish. Sounds German.
When did the Germans use the krona, John?
Well, they've very nearly adapted that currency.
Yeah, since you went to America, John, Europe's just one homogenous lump to you, isn't it?
It's true. Everything gets simpler when you move over here, Andy. You're either American or you're not. Maybe you're Canadian. As you're talking of which, I'm off to Montreal after this bugle, Andy.
All right.
To host a gala called The Decline of the American Empire. So, thereby biting the other hand that feeds me. So, adding that to what we've done over the last few bugles, Andy, I now have two hands in my mouth and I'm chomping on them both pretty hard.
You're hosting a gala, John.
Yeah. I've always been, I thought, an ideal candidate to host galas, Andy. Well, any formal event.
I always thought that was what your career was building up to,
yeah.
Gala hosting.
Yeah.
You're going to have to go black tie for that, John?
Well, let's hope not, Andy, because I certainly haven't packed that.
So this is Bugle 163 for the week beginning Monday, the 1st of August, 2011. August, that means Edinburgh begins in a couple of days' time. That's going to be fine. That's fine. Thanks to all buglers who've come to my preview so far. And if you came to one of the early previews, let me assure you, the show has moved on. As always, a section of the Bugle is going straight in the bin this week. Book reviews in the bin, including the latest top-selling releases. Potholing for Cowards, A Woman's Guide to Medieval Diseases. You Can Look But You Cannot Touch, How to Seduce Whilst Working as a Museum Attendant. And Fishing for the Aggressive, Verbal Threats and Violent Body Language to Intimidate River Fish.
How would you intimidate a trout, Andy?
Well, I don't know, you probably want to go sleeveless and just stand on the riverbank flexing your pecs. So, then they'll probably just jump out and say, all right, cook me up a treat.
Message received.
Yeah, I'm a bit out of the loop.
You are ripped. Top story this week, Debts to America! Debts to America! Debt! Andy, as we've touched on in the last few bugles, America has got a bit of a problem with debt at the moment. They haven't been particularly careful with their money and haven't really prepared at all for their retirement as an empire, which, as China will testify, is just around the corner. They've been very irresponsible with some particularly unnecessary luxury wars in recent time. The Iraq War was the equivalent of a middle-aged man buying a Porsche. It really smacks of a nation experiencing a midlife crisis and trying to capture its youth once more. America's current debt ceiling is $14.3 trillion, which means that it has pretty much maxed out its own credit card. And the three options seem to be, do you, one, cut that credit card in two, two, do you apply for more credit, or do you, three, cut it in two, then tape it back together and hope the shops will still accept it? And it might be worth just briefly explaining how we've got to this point, because at first glance, you can find yourself thinking, this is f***ing insane. However, I must say that after you've heard this explanation, you are probably going to find yourself arriving at the same conclusion anyway. It is quite impressive for a country to be this dysfunctional. I believe after you've heard some of this explanation, the main question is going to be, how do these Americans put on their trousers in the morning?
$14.3 trillion, John, that is a big debt. So to me, that is the Sistine Chapel of debt ceilings.
It's true.
It is a truly mind-boggling achievement that people in centuries to come will still look back on and think, wow, That's f***ing incredible. How on earth did they do that? That is the product of a truly special mind. No normal person could have done that.
Mankind was involved in a number like this? Surely not. It seems touched by the hand of God himself. The US government gets a lot of bills every month, Andy. That's how it gets this high, including military salaries, interest on existing loans, Medicare, and a subscription to Cigar Aficionado that they keep forgetting to cancel. The current debt limit was hit back in May, but that deadline didn't turn out to be quite as deadly as deadlines are supposed to be. This is because they managed to extend the drop-dead deadline date to August the 2nd, which they insist is as deadly as deadlines get, and that no one wants to test the deadliness of this particular drop-dead deadline unless they want a large bowl of death on their hands. And they managed to cleverly extend this date by employing various economic tricks, such as postponing payments into government pension schemes and using better-than-expected tax revenues. And Timothy Geithner really is part economist, part children's party magician. He can make it look like a budget deficit has completely disappeared before simply lifting up a plastic cup and revealing that it was actually there the whole time.
But still no agreement, John. There seems to be an awful lot of baffling negotiation going on. It seems that the politicians of America have been horse trading like a French chef preparing to cater for a lavish wedding. But still no agreement. And quite a lot of petty political point scoring seems to be going on, John. I can't say that I've been following this particularly closely because I've been trying to write some unbelievably idiotic jokes. But what's the latest score in the political point scoring?
Well, it's currently 0-0, Andy, with both teams looking both angry and uninterested, if that's even possible. I mean, remember, the key thing is here, this isn't the government wanting to borrow money to buy things in the future. This is the government wanting to borrow money to pay for things that they've already bought. It's like a teenager going up to their parents and saying, please can I borrow $20 for a new car that I've just bought? And the parents saying, wait, hold on, you've already bought the car. And didn't it cost more than $20? And the teenager saying, you're quite right, it did. Can I have $35,000, please? The problem is that all government borrowing in America has to be approved under the Constitution by Congress. Now, because there's no real... The strange thing is there's no particular need to have a debt ceiling other than to force massive arguments on a semi-regular basis. Most other countries don't have a debt ceiling. They just have an inbuilt sense of what they can and can't afford.
Well, I think recent history suggests that they don't have that.
That is true. That is true. I could almost sense the Greeks waking up in the afternoon over there saying, what? That's not true. Anyway, please keep it down. I'm napping.
Again.
America
for the 2,500th year in a row.
America is like a gambling addict that knows it has a problem, walking into a casino saying, I have all the money that I'm going to spend here in my hand. Please don't anyone lend me any more, no matter how hard I beg you later on. Then, when they need more money later in the night, trying to win back some of their losses, they end up having to either use their car keys as collateral or start offering cut-rate hand jobs in the car park to raise enough to keep going.
I've got a system. It's going to come good. It can't land on black two times in a row.
The overall borrowing cap was actually first introduced by Congress in 1917 to make it simpler for the government to finance its efforts in World War One, and that was a war worth throwing some money at, Andy. You got a lot of bang for your buck back then. There was no way Congress was going to feel shortchanged.
Yeah. Also, you saved a lot on all those pensions that you didn't have to pay out afterwards as well.
That's true. It was a win-win and massive loss.
Bottom line, it made sense. Trench warfare made sound economic sense from a long-term financial picture. But how many governments would have the courage to say that these days?
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. Well, I guess, John, it goes back a long way, basically to 1791, when George Washington slapped one War of Independence on his nation's credit card for the now bargain price of $75 million. And I guess he probably didn't think at that point that his inspirational fight today, pay tomorrow scheme would still be quite so avidly pursued in the early 21st century. But I think a lot of it comes down to the problems of democratic government, John, because essentially the art of democratic government is to spend vast amounts of money on being seen to be doing stuff, financed either by spending money you don't have or cutting back spending on actually doing anything. And therefore, governments basically won't economise significantly, because the less they spend, the less they can appear to be doing, and therefore the less reason they have to exist. But I guess we do need to keep things in perspective, John, because, let's be honest, the Black Death was worse. You know, we might have tough times at the moment, but at least we can sneeze without having to cancel all of next week's appointments.
That's true, Andy. Yeah. Well, that's the first thing that's not been depressing that I've heard regarding commentary around this story.
There were warnings of about things like this happening. Let me quote from Abraham Lincoln, the professional ex-president and two-time hat wearer of the year, who said this in 1864. He said, "I see in the near future a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country. Corporations have been enthroned, an era of corruption in high places will follow, and the money power of the country will endeavour to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until the wealth is aggregated in a few hands and the republic is destroyed. I feel at this moment more anxiety for the safety of my country than ever before, even in the midst of war."
Oh my God!
Can't say this kind of crept up on us like the once in a millennium, once in a century credit tsunami that was it Greenspan described it as. Thomas Jefferson: "I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property in their until their children wake up homeless on the continent their forefathers conquered." There you go. Here's another one. "The national budget must be balanced. The public debt must be reduced. The arrogance of the authorities must be moderated and controlled. Payments to foreign governments must be reduced if the nation doesn't want to go bankrupt." So this warning, do you know how long ago that was said, John?
How long?
55 BC by Cicero.
No
fucking way. Have been ignoring that advice for over 2,000 years now, John. And there's no sign that we're going to start gnawing it.
As the deadline on Tuesday approaches, the tone of the discussion varies from apocalyptic visions of the world collapsing to almost creepy positivity. Because Harry Reid hinted of a potential compromise at the middle of the week when he said, "Magic things can happen here in Congress in a very short period of time under the right circumstances." He then pointed at a wardrobe and said, "Maybe there's a mystical world somewhere in there, and we'll all go on an adventure which will teach us about the importance of cooperation. We'll learn these efforts from a mystical lion in a not-that-subtle religious allegory. And even though we'll be in there for months, when we come out, only seconds will have gone by." Then he paused and looked at the floor and said, "Or maybe we are f***ed." And likewise, the president tried to fire up the American people whilst actually annoying them by interrupting the Bachelorette for a presidential address on TV this week, and he said, "Let's seize this moment to show why the United States of America is still the greatest nation on earth. Not because we can still keep our word and meet our obligations, but because we can still come together as one nation." Before saying, "Ah, f*** it, even I don't believe that. Let me try again. Let me just go back and try that again. We're what now? We're live." Oh, fudge.
So there has been a lot of petty political point scoring and points being notched up by both sides. But the problem is that the people notching the points are essentially on the same side. It's all very reminiscent of that famous football match in the recent Sporting Allegory Cup in which America and China played each other. And half the US team were trying to score in one goal and half the team in the other goal, whilst the Chinese sat back thinking, "Well, this is all going very well indeed."
America has raised its debt ceiling multiple times, and usually it's nothing more than a formality to get it done. Under Ronald Reagan, the Republican-styled greatest fiscal president in the history of the galaxy, the debt limit was raised 18 times. And the real shitstorm at the centre of this volcano of pain is that Congress also gets to set the government's spending commitments and tax-raising powers, which means that any administration can be required to spend more than it earns while being prevented from borrowing any money to make up the difference. Essentially, Congress can hand the president a shit sandwich and just sit back and watch him have to eat it. "Come on, Mr. President, we're not leaving until that plate is clean."
But it seems no one's prepared to back down on these things, John. It's pretty much like the Titanic, which went down with the captain proudly announcing, well, at least I did not compromise my principles. Boats should go in straight lines. You cannot show weakness to an iceberg. It will punish you. I've made my point, and if I had to get very wet to do so, well, so be it. And this looks like being another triumph of disruption for the Tea Party. Although, at this rate, the only tea they'll be able to afford to drink in America will be economy tea bags cut with dried mouse droppings, and they'll be dunking biscuits made of disused commemorative Michael Dukakis coasters into it.
The markets have actually been relatively stable as this deadline fast approaches, with everyone, I think, just assuming, well, there's no way they're actually going to default. There's no way they do something that stupid. But it's like watching a toddler holding a spider in his hand and thinking, there's no way he's going to eat that. 9 times out of 10, you're probably right. But unfortunately, that means that 10% of the time, that spider is going into the toddler's mouth. And you've just got to be clear about what kind of toddler you're dealing with as a nation. Is America the kind of toddler who delicately puts the spider back on the ground? Or is America the kind of toddler that swallows that spider, then bursts into tears and demands a new spider? Now, there's no right answer to that, but there's also no way that it's the first one.
Well, the problem is, allowing America a debt ceiling that high is like leaving a child unattended in a locked shed for an afternoon with a 5-litre tub of ice cream. You are going to come back to find an ice cream covered child complaining that you've made it feel sick.
Well, if you can stomach it, here are some of the details of each side. Each side at the moment have detailed proposals over the extent and manner in which the other side can go f*** themselves. But detailed economic plans supported cohesively by either party have proved quite hard to come by. Republicans have proposed raising the debt ceiling by just enough to fund the government for another 6 to 8 months to allow more time for negotiations, which, completely coincidentally, I'm sure, would be around the run-up to the 2012 presidential elections. And Timothy Geithner responded to that suggestion by doing another of his special magic tricks. This one involved making all the fingers on his hands disappear but one. And some Democrats have backed a longer extension, but that will basically involve both sides arguing the distance with which everyone should aim to kick the can down the road. The truth is, this cannot go on indefinitely, and both sides are getting involved in a dangerous piece of brinksmanship here. This is like a game of financial chicken. The Senate Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, accused the Democrats of playing with fire, and he said that while flicking a lit match at a 1970s sofa.
So, what are we on now? Plan B, is it now? Or are we on to Plan C already? All I know is that if the next couple of plans don't work, then Plan E is for everyone to stand around grabbing their ball saying, "Hey! Hey! Hey!" Plan F is sticking their fingers in their ears going, "La, la, 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 la." Plan G is a nuclear strike on Mexico in an attempt to deflect attention away from the debt. And Plan H is just to ask Britain to take over again. Well, I'm afraid, America, you've had your chance and you f***ing blew it. We are now busy.
Yes. That ship has sailed. Oh, who are we kidding? We'll take you back. Come to mama.
Ironically, one of the great modern Americans, Muddy Waters, the famous blues singer, he said, "You can't lose what you never had." And I think his already minimal reputation as a financial advisor is taking even more of a hit after this. I mean, for a start, he had clearly never been accidentally over his overdraft limit for 20 minutes. And also, I think what this has proved is that you, A, can quite clearly lose what you never had, B, you can also lose what no one ever had, and C, the time has probably come to stop losing stuff as a general rule. So, he might have been the father of Chicago blues, and, you know, he might have a voice like liquefied elemental truth. But as an economist, he's got a lot to learn. A lot to learn.
So, I know...
Chris, you're shaking your head there.
No, I was agreeing with you.
Oh, right, okay.
No, I was shaking my head at his lack of economic nous.
Yeah, you think John Lee Hooker, he's the go-to guy.
Absolutely, right? Every time.
Yeah. If you play all John Lee Hooker's songs backwards, they basically give you a 10-point guide for how to work the stock markets.
I bought my ISA off him, yeah.
Do you know, that's how Warren Buffett had... he had all John Lee Hooker's records as a kid and a broken gramophone that played them backwards. That's why he's where he is today.
Economic fact. That whizzing sound was a fact just whooshing past your ear. You nearly took that in the head. So I know this can be soul-depressingly difficult to follow, but what are the actual proposals on the table? Well, this is what they're actually suggesting as of now, and that might change by the time I get to the end of this sentence. John Boehner's plan would trim $917 billion from the US budget deficit over 10 years and would raise the debt limit by up to $900 billion. And the president has said that he will veto that. Harry Reid's plan for the Democrats, supported by the president, would cut $2.2 trillion from deficits and raise the debt ceiling by $2.7 trillion. But there's no way that that is going to make it through the Republican-controlled House. In fact, the Republicans alone are struggling to get their own party to agree to that proposal. They're trying to force a bill through their own House, as prominent, as you mentioned, Andy, Tea Party members feel it offers too many concessions to the Democrats. And Boehner reportedly told dissenting Tea Party colleagues last night, "Get your arse in line."
To quote Abraham Lincoln. Also to quote Jesus. Or ass. It was ass, wasn't it? Well, you've got very annoyed people queue jumps in traffic.
I'm trying to march into the city. This is a big deal.
4 convictions for being messianic in charge of a donkey.
Let me simply say this regarding the Tea Party, Andy. They are offensively misusing the term Tea Party, and that's completely unacceptable. Tea parties are not about large groups of white people gathering together to complain angrily about something they can't fully articulate. The only acceptable time to use the term tea party is when you're sitting at a small plastic table holding a miniature china teacup, sipping tea delicately with a group of chimpanzees dressed up as Victorian ladies. That's a tea party! That's the only tea party worthy of the term!
Oh, to be fair, it can be quite hard to tell the difference sometimes, particularly when Michelle Bachmann's involved.
Both Republican and Democratic plans underwent massive revisions on Wednesday after congressional budget analysts said that the savings advertised by each one had been overstated. And basically, both sides had been claiming cuts based on less future spending on wars. And not only is that bullshit economics, it's also based on the huge presumption that America will have the willpower to be able to say no to wars in the future. America loves wars like Imelda Marcos loves shoes, Andy, to a near cartoon extent. It's like a heroin addict claiming to be a millionaire based on the amount of money that he won't spend on heroin in the future.
I guess the problem is, John, that most Western economies, well, we've basically saddled ourselves with debt, and debt is now riding us like a birthday donkey.
But the incredible thing is that for all this taking the world to the brink of financial Armageddon, the Boehner and Reid plans both overlap in key ways, both trimming spending over the next decade, and both inexplicably shunning calls for tax increases on the wealthy. So both plans acknowledge that America has a huge problem, and both plans don't really like to deal with it, but in completely different ways. So they can't agree, essentially, on which way to not really solve the problem. And all of this means that, as the BBC reported this week, the most probable scenario is going to be a last-minute scramble for a compromise, followed by razor's-edge votes in both chambers. It's going to be like Indiana Jones getting chased by the huge boulder, with America as Harrison Ford and the debt as the massive boulder that's about to break their f***ing legs. In fact, that's
what democracy's all about, John.
Yeah, but that's not the end of the movie references, because something incredible happened this week. In an attempt...
Oh, not the Smurfs movie being released, was it?
No. No. Oh,
although, I heard some of the critics thought that was pretty incredible.
I don't know. I think that might be out this weekend.
Is it?
But right. I think I have no plans to go and see it.
Oh, right. By all accounts, the initial media reactions... I mean, it's maybe slightly better than the last time, John. But,
Are you suggesting I'm going 0-2, Andy?
I'm just suggesting that if people start calling you Mr. Matthews because you keep churning out turkeys, you know, I'm not saying you should take offence at that, but I'm just warning you that may happen.
I'm never more dangerous, Andy, than when I'm 2 strikes down in the count. That's when I'm really looking to go yard. 2 whiffs, and then I'm going to get a $500 million grossing movie that wins me something.
Yeah. Godfather 5. That's got to be the one for you.
Godfather 5. Yeah. I'm right here. I'm ready to go. Yeah, something incredible happened this week. In an attempt at inspiring unity during a Republican House conference meeting, the RNC showed a violent movie clip from the Ben Affleck movie The Town. In it, the bank robber, Doug McRae, says to his friend, Jem Coughlin, "I need your help. I can't tell you what it is. You can never ask me about it later, and we're going to hurt some people." And then his friend then responds, "Whose car are we going to take?" That seems, as choices go regarding movie clips at this awkward economic time where Americans are hurting, that seems a f***ing bad choice. And Democratic James Clyburn of South Carolina was very critical of it, saying Americans deserve much better behaviour from their lawmakers. But when a reporter then asked him if Democrats had ever shown violent movies to fire up the troops, Clyburn said, "Yes, they had. They once showed Braveheart at a caucus meeting after Republicans took over the House majority." He said the clip was used as, and I quote, "a metaphor for us maintaining our own faith in the process." Are you kidding me, Clyburn? Do you remember how Braveheart ended? We Brits chopped that little upstart up into pieces. Did he think that Braveheart successfully overthrew England? We killed that stroppy f***er. We killed him.
And we chopped his
balls
off.
That's how Braveheart ended. That was the happy ending. We sliced him up.
We served his balls as sweeties. As mint imperials at the end of dinner, I believe, officially. And if you don't think things can get any worse, while we were recording that bit about the American debt crisis, England lost 3 wickets.
So, are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So there you go.
Oh, Andy.
All these things are linked up. These things are all, it's an interconnected world.
Andy, let me express my gratitude for 2 reasons there. Thank you for informing me of that. And thank you for being so focused. Join the Bugle to be watching. I'm not even going to say have the cricket on in the background. I'm saying have your talking in the background and the cricket in the foreground.
I don't think it showed. I think it was fine.
By the time people listen to this, it'll all be fine anyway.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Chris will make it sound like I was bang on the banana.
I was talking about the cricket.
Oh, right, OK.
Singing penis news now! And you might think you've misheard what I just said there. So let me just restate it. Singing penis news now!
To quote Wolf Blitzer. And Hugh Edwards.
Andy, look, there are headlines and there are headlines. And there are headlines designed to get the human interest. And how about this for one of those? Singing penis sets noise record for water insect. There's no way I'm not reading the whole of that article.
That sounds like a cryptic crossword clue.
Yeah. This is the article. A tiny water boatman is the loudest animal on Earth relative to its body size. Scientists from France and Scotland recorded the aquatic animal singing at up to 99.2 decibels, the equivalent of listening to a loud orchestra play while sitting in the front row. For a start, Andy, this story is right in the Bugle wheelhouse. This is in our sweet spot. Because the insect makes the sound by, and I quote, rubbing its penis against its abdomen in a process known as stridulation. I have one key question regarding this, Andy. Are experts absolutely sure that that is what's making the noise and it's not the noise of the water boatman screaming in pain while it's doing that?
Is that unusual behaviour? Oh, sorry, I know you didn't go to private school, John, but it just doesn't seem that unusual to me.
Well, that's the thing, Andy. How hard can this be, rubbing your penis against your abdomen to make a sound? So I've never actually tried it myself. So just let me give it a quick go now and just see. Let me just give it a quick go and see if I can get something out of it. Hold on. Child, holy infant, so tender and mild. This is going to hurt.
That's a dangerous lyric for what you'll be doing.
Ow! 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 please. Ow. 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 Oh, heavenly peace.
Oh. You've always called it your heavenly peace, haven't you? And if that's proved one thing, it's that John is not a real Jew. But you can tell from the timbre on it.
Well, Andy, you know, after you've done 20 minutes of depressing jokes about the debt ceiling, sometimes you need a singing penis bit. Yin and yang, Andy. Yin and yang.
I just worry about you being pigeonholed, John, as the guy does that thing with the singing penis, you know. I mean, it's good. I mean, you can make a lot of money as a novelty act, but you want to keep your options open. That's all I'm saying. Bugle feature section now, and weather news. Well, whether you like weather or not, it's here to stay, it seems. And in the Ukraine, it's caused... this is a few weeks ago now. We've postponed this section repeatedly due to bullshitting too much about other stuff. The Ukrainian national broadcaster suspended its live weather broadcast after a forecaster commented on the country's gloomy political climate. And the chief meteorologist praised the beauty of spring. He said how wonderful were the delicate scents of lilacs and lilies of the valley and the melodic trills of birds, before complaining about disorder, lawlessness and injustice in his country. And that's what you want to hear from your weather forecasters, John. Also, the two are not mutually exclusive. You can have fragrant lawlessness. I mean, just look at the French Revolution. All fought out to the delightful aroma of freshly baked baguettes and pan-fried foie gras. And really, weather forecasters are the only remaining objective consciences of any nation now. In fact, just this morning, I heard on a BBC weather forecast someone say, "It's a beautiful summer's day. Today, temperatures in the high 70s with a light southwesterly breeze to keep you feeling cool and fresh. So the perfect day for the people of Britain to rise as one and overthrow the complacent media political corporate complex that has been running this nation for decades. But hurry, by the weekend, some showers will slip down from the north and reflect the inescapable gloom of post-imperial decline in this once great nation as it fritters around on the fringes of international relevance. Oh, well, we'll all be dead soon anyway. And it's always cloudy underground. Back to you in this studio." So, this is what I think weather forecasters have a duty to, we all know, if you want to know what the weather is, you don't need some guy to tell you what the weather is. You just need to stick your head out of whatever train you're in at the time. Hope there's no tunnel going past and see if your head gets wet. There have been other complaints about weather forecasters in Britain recently. Various old school weather forecasters being complained about the new generation not really forecasting the weather, but basically having a bit of a friendly chat and making assumptions about people's lives, telling them when it might be good to have a barbecue, rather than just saying it's going to be sunny, or when to take an umbrella outside, rather than saying it might rain, or when to put some clothes on if you don't want to die of hypothermia, or when not to walk around on roller skates with a giant sail on your head because there's a tornado coming, and also when it's dangerous to go outside if you osmose. So there's a kind of lack of direct forecasting these days. And finally, some old-fashioned weather forecasting tips. Now, we all know that a red sky at night means one or both of Shepherd's Delights, or the eternal flames of hell engulfing the planet in righteous punishment for the sins of humankind. But how else can you tell what the weather will be like tomorrow without resorting to time travel or bribery? Well, according to old wives' tales, if cows are lying down, it's going to rain. That's not necessarily so. It could be a protest against their exploitation by the dairy industry. If a donkey goes the wrong way up a motorway, it's going to be heavy sleet. If you see a spider weaving a web in the shape of Jane Fonda's frontellas, it's going to be 24 degrees Celsius with a light northwesterly wind. And here's one. This is actually true. If you count the number of chirps a cricket chirps in 14 seconds, then add 14, it gives you the temperature in Fahrenheit. That's apparently a genuine weather tip from days gone by. It certainly works. When my pet cricket Geraldo got stuck in the oven when I put last Sunday's roast on, he went f***ing mental. 206 chirps in 14 seconds. Bang on. Although most of them weren't so much chirps as swear chirps. He was pretty cross. Still, he crisped up lovely and was a nice treat for the wife. And also, if you see a duck buying a submarine, it's going to rain hard. And if you see a marlin buying a swimming pool, it's expecting a serious drought. Your emails now, and this one comes in on the subject of Edinburgh Festival. "Dear Andy, I hear your show this year is going to be, quote, probably the most awesome artistic creation in the history of humanity. Fit to sit alides fit to sit alongside any achievement in any civilization at any time. How can I get tickets for it? Love from Barack in Washington. Long-time bugler, first-time emailer. So, well, thanks for asking, Barack. But, well, it starts a couple of preview shows, Wednesday and Thursday in the coming week. And then 4:25 every day from Friday the 5th of August until Sunday the 28th or 27th. Round about then. Near enough. Anyway, pop along. It's going to be awesome. Is that allowed, John? I mean, you sound disapproving there, John.
No, it's fine. It's fine, Andy. It's fine. You do what you have to do.
Now, this email, it was nice to hear from Barack in Washington, but this email comes in from another bugler, Kevin, the elite thinker of things, he describes himself as. That's a strong, that'd be a good wrestling name.
It sure would.
Dear Chris, John and Andy, in order of known frequency of being verbally defiled at toll booths, appearances in movies about Smurfs and Andy, respectively. I was recently driving down the Massachusetts Turnpike on the way to a job site and encountered what I can only describe as a loyal fan of the Bugle. After pulling off the turnpike, I approached the exit 6 toll booth with plans to hand money to the booth worker and drive away. You know, pretty typical behaviour. Yeah,
yeah.
Good tactic at a toll booth.
Yeah.
In most cases, when approaching a toll booth, I'll turn down the volume of whatever it is I'm listening to so as not to piss off the person that will soon be handling my money. On the morning in question, however, I was listening to an old episode of The Bugle and had lost all sense of time, manners, and my own American accent. As I pulled up alongside the toll booth attendant, I greeted her cheerfully, handed her $3 bills and waited for her to give me my change. The attendant then extended... The attendant first handed me my receipt, then extended her other closed fist to transfer my due 90 cents from her hand to mine. In doing so, however, she paused, made a devastatingly meaningful eye contact with me, and then with a smirk said, "F*** you, Chris."
No way!
Just before dropping the coins into my hand.
That is fantastic! Oh my God! That is wonderful.
Doesn't quite equate with listening to the Bugle whilst... having, what was that awful operation someone was having?
We're a proctologist.
That's right, yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
It's pretty good, though. It's up there.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well done. Well
Very
done, Kevin.
Very nice.
And even better done to the toll booth attendant. Also, various emails calling for more of the congressman's penis. Well, yeah, it'll come. It'll come. I've been a little bit busy with Edinburgh stuff this week, so I thought I should probably prioritise that rather than editing Grisham's work. But it's interesting, because there are quite a few people slagging off the congressman's penis.
Idiots.
And there's been a backlash against the backlash. Now, I think there is a democratic mandate for it to carry on ad infinitum, John. And if you do come to my Edinburgh show, you can send in your abusive review of my Edinburgh show.
Uh-oh.
We'll read out...
Careful, Andy. Careful.
Oh, no, that is... Can I take those words back?
You might be getting people from national newspapers taking you up on that.
Again. Do keep your emails coming in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk. Right, that's it for this week's Bugle. Thank you for listening. We're off next week, so we'll have an extra sub-episode that Chris is looking hugely excited about putting together. It's going to be absolutely sensational. It's going to be the broadcasting highlight of the year.
All filler.
Yep. All filler, no killer.
Yep.
And we'll be back in 2 weeks. In the meantime, I'll see you all, every single one of you, at my Edinburgh show, 4:25 at the Stand. Bye.
Have a lovely 2 weeks. Bye.